Diversity, equity, and inclusion, also referred to as DE&I, is a hot topic today as companies and organizations are beginning to understand its value. Therefore, they are incorporating DE&I initiatives into their company strategies. There is no doubt that there is value in diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
We live in a global society made up of various people, cultures, languages, interests, and needs. If businesses and organizations are going to remain competitive, they must understand and embrace the value of diversity, equity, and inclusion. I'm absolutely thrilled to have Rhonda C. Height today with us. We are going to have an enlightening conversation with Rhonda, who is a human resource consultant. Her topic is, where do companies stand with diversity, equity, and inclusion now? Rhonda C. Height is a human resource training consultant, author, and registered corporate coach who works with organizations to design and deliver experiential training programs, support the human resources function, and provide business coaching services for individuals and teams. A subject matter expert in the areas of diversity, equity, and inclusion, interpersonal communications, and leadership development, Rhonda has facilitated learning events throughout the United States and internationally. Welcome, Rhonda.
Thank you. Good morning, Ramona, or hello.
Good morning. You look fabulous. I wish everybody could see you. You look gorgeous today.
Thank you. Decided to shower this morning.
You look great. You look great. I'm really, really excited about having you on, you know. With both of us really involved in initiatives with diversity, equity, and inclusion. I love your spirit. I'm so glad that one of our mutual friends introduced the two of us. And I really love your spirit. And I'm happy that we have gotten to know each other. And I'm happy that you accepted my invitation to be on the Empowerment Zone.
Absolutely. Thank you for extending it. I'm excited about our conversation today.
Yeah. So as always in our interview, we'd love for our guests to tell us about themselves. I know that our mutual friend, Michelle Bradley, introduced us. I've got to give a shout out to Michelle. Yes. But tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, your personal and professional background. And maybe you could tell us how you got into DE&I and human resources. Looking forward to hearing all about you.
All right. Thank you, Ramona. Well, I actually am from Detroit, Michigan, although I now call Atlanta home. So I guess I'm a Motown peach.
I like that. A Motown peach.
Yes. And I actually, my first job was in human resources. And so it just kind of went from there and building and kind of growing in the career. With that, I was worked for the Federal Reserve Bank, the Detroit branch in HR. And then I went on to be an arbitrator at a hospital in Detroit, and then moved here to Atlanta and worked for Coca-Cola for 7 years, also in HR. But, you know, one thing I have always been aware of is that I have an entrepreneurial spirit. I guess they say she get it from her mama. And in my case, my grandma too. And so the last 2 years I was at Coke, I started my company, a human resources consulting firm, Let's Talk LLC. And that is where the work with the diversity, equity, and inclusion really began, because I would say the late 80s, early 90s, and I'm dating myself, but that's when the whole conversation about diversity really starts circulating in the corporate world. And for me, I was excited because it's like, finally, we are going to address some of the things that as an HR professional, I had seen for many years around systemic racism and its impact on everything from performance evaluations to promotions and things of that nature. And I just really took an interest to it. So as I grew my firm, that was one of the areas that I decided to target. But we also deal with soft skills too, you know, interpersonal communication skills, leadership, et cetera. And so that's me on a professional note. Let's Talk actually celebrates its 28th year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I can't believe I've been doing this almost 30 years. Jeez. But so I'm happy about that. On a personal note, I am a mom. I have an adult son, Marcel, and he gave me my heartbeat.
Oh, my goodness. Brayden. Oh, I know he's cool.
Brayden is 7. He'll be 8 this year. He calls me Gigi. Because, you know, I thought I was too cool, Ramona, for grandma, grandmama. And so I settled on Gigi, and he is my heartbeat. He brings me so much joy. I love that little boy. I like to dance. I am a voracious reader. I'm always reading something. You know, and to kind of woosah and relax and get away from some of the heaviness of the work that I do and just what's happening in the world in general. I do adult coloring books. That's my thing. Mm. So that's a little bit about me. I'm also a matriarch. I became a matriarch of my family in my 40s, which I don't know how normal that is, but that is a role that I have as well.
Wow, we have something in common. I love to dance and read. And one of my other favorite pastimes is eating. I love to eat.
Yeah, that too. Especially with the goodies. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but the adult coloring book. I used to always do coloring books as a child. I did not even know they existed. I can't wait to check out some of your coloring books and how you choose to express yourself.
Yes. And, you know, they have the black ones now. Like I got the Barack Obama coloring book. I have it's so relaxed. And it was actually suggested by my therapist who said, you know, you need something. Your brain is always going. You need something to kind of calm your spirit. And so I started doing it, but I really got into it when my sister, who has since passed, was going through her journey with cancer. And I would be at the hospital, be down there for chemo. And I realized it was so relaxing that I didn't have that anxiety I normally would have in a situation like that. Mm-hmm. And just the effect is wonderful. So
wow.
I recommend it to anybody. It's a really good way to
Great recommendation. So for all of you out there who are looking for some activity that can be very calming and just can help you to woosah, as our Motown Peach Gigi just stated, then check out some adult coloring books. And she says that there are also some that have the theme, African-American themes. I have to look into this. Absolutely. So I can't wait to see some of your coloring books.
Inspirational. They have ones that are part journal too. I love those. Those are my favorite.
Wow.
Part journal. So if anyone is into journaling and would like to try that with their journaling, it's great as well.
Great idea. So we're here to talk about where do companies stand with diversity, equity, and inclusion now. So if you could, just for our people who are not familiar with, our audience members who are not familiar with diversity, equity, and inclusion, because they're different. They mean different. They're very distinct, because some people kind of run them all together. Mm-hmm. Can you first define diversity, equity, and inclusion? Yeah. And then tell us your perspective about how companies are incorporating DE&I into their strategies. And is it any different nowadays than it was when it first the discussions first began in the 80s?
Okay. Well, when it first started, it was just about diversity. That was the whole thing. And diversity basically is having representation from different demographics, you know, in the workforce. And I always say diversity is the what, inclusion is the how, equity and inclusion is the how. Because diversity is easy. You can put five people who look exactly alike on the, in the room and still have diversity because it extends beyond just the things we can see. There's diversity of thought, how people problem solve, experiences, et cetera. So there's that part. And many companies originally felt, well, hey, if you can look around and see Black and brown people or other nationalities, then we're doing a good job with diversity. And while they may have increase the numbers from a representation standpoint, the work environments were still not inclusive. They were still not equitable. So after then, so the next conversation that joined diversity was inclusion, right? So to have an inclusion basically is to have a workplace where everyone feels that they belong, where they feel respected, where they can do their best work. That is the goal of an inclusive work environment. Equity did not join the conversation really on a in a major way until last year after the racial reckoning behind George Floyd's murder. And basically, equity is a little bit different from equality. Equality says we treat everybody the same. Equity says, yeah, we treat everyone the same. However, we understand that there are some factors, and in this case, perhaps systemic racism, right, where we might need to provide additional support or resources or to be more intentional, if you will, in providing a level playing field for success and for inclusion in the organization's success. So those are the three things. And again, companies do really well with diversity. Equity and inclusion still continues, in my humble opinion, to be a struggle. You know, after last year, during last year, my phone started blowing up. I mean, immediately after, you know, the incident with George Floyd, and everybody wanted to do something about it. Oh, we want to have sessions where we listen to our employees. Oh, we want to do some kind of training. Oh, we, and I was really excited because for the first time in my career, they were willing to have some really difficult conversations, including around topics like white privilege. And all these years, nobody ever wanted to touch that. That was like the kiss of death, if you even suggested, let's talk about white privilege. And companies were really kind of going there. And but what I have seen over this past year is that the conversations are dying down. The focus is not at the same level of priority, not to say that it's not still there, because you're hearing just about, you know, if you go on LinkedIn or you follow, like I do, because I'm an HR person, you follow what's happening in these organizations. They are appointing more diversity in their leadership. So they're still, you know, or giving money to small or Black and brown owned businesses. So there are still efforts, but in my humble opinion, the efforts still do not address the root problems that these efforts are intended to solve. And there's less priority around that. Now it's becoming more of, well, we know we should do this. We know it's good for our brand. We know it will give us a good rating, if you will, with the consumers and things like that. But I'm seeing less and less around people that are at or organizations that are actually walking the talk, you know, in a meaningful kind of way, if that makes sense.
Yes. So what do you see as the biggest hurdle that organizations and companies must overcome in order to be equitable and inclusive organizations? What's happening internally that is preventing them from being totally, even though they may have diversity, they're not inclusive, nor are they equitable?
Yeah. Well, I think change is just one of those things that's hard and it takes time. And in this case, in order to get to that place, you're having to change people's mindsets, people's paradigms. You're having to challenge them to do the work to uncover biases, or at least own the biases. Because, you know, you hear unconscious bias a lot. A lot of the bias is not unconscious. Folks know. They know. However, choosing to do something about it is different. It's kind of like, you know, James Baldwin says, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. And that's what this is about. And facing it, you know, training is a good start. Of course, I'm going to say that that's what I do, but I also believe in that because it does help to increase the level of awareness. It also can sometimes create an environment where people have these epiphanies or these moments of insight, but then what are they doing with it? And that's the challenge. What are you doing with it? We've had all this awareness. We now know, okay, this is happening. We understand that some of the things around, say, even employee development, for the longest, and even now, I go into these major corporations where you see the diversity when you walk their halls, when you're in their cafeterias, and then I go into my classroom and I can count on my hand the number of people that are minority. Or even classes where there are none. And I'm like, okay, so I've seen all these brown and black people in the hallway or other nationalities, you know, in the hallway, or women. They're not in my classroom. What's happening here? And so I think that is one area that organizations can do better at from an equity standpoint, because training, providing resources, allowing them to increase their knowledge and skills is one way to close some of the gap that is often there. But they'll say, well, everybody has a shot. Well, everybody doesn't necessarily have a shot, because these folks that are sitting in the class, they're sitting in here with their sponsors, people who are advocating for them, people who are mentoring them, people who are, and then these other folks, who they got, you know, because that's one way that people can do that. Begin to create relationships across the board with people that are not like you. Allow yourself to, if you are in a leadership role, allow yourself to be challenged. That's something that leaders often shy away from because nobody wants to look bad, or they don't want you to tell them about themselves. You know, and my grandmother used to tell me, you can tell a person anything. You can tell them to go to Hades and have them happy to be on the way. It's all how you serve it up. And so I think leaders having the courage to receive feedback and then actually doing something with that feedback, I think even from performance management. And I think about Coke, which is a former employer, and this is public record, so I'm not sharing anything confidential, but in 2002, you might have remembered that class action lawsuit that they had that was brought by African Americans. And it was historical from the standpoint of that is the first time that discrimination had been alleged, and I have to give this caveat, Coke said, we didn't do anything wrong, we're just going to pay out these millions of dollars. And at the time, that was like the biggest settlement ever, but it was around the performance evaluation system. So, you know, let's say me and Jane, you know, our colleagues, and we do the same job. Let's say I'm the better performer, but Jane gets the highest performance evaluation. Who do you think, number one, economically is going to benefit more, because the evaluation system was, you know, monetarily based? Who do you think is going to have a better opportunity for promotion and movement within the organization? Jane, even though I'm the best worker, you know, I'm over there killing the game, and Jane is doing what Jane does. But on paper, it looks like Jane is the rock star. And so what happens, I think, is, and then you, I, as an HR person, and this would, it would just hurt me so bad. I would see often in performance reviews for people of color, poor attitude. Bad attitude, negative. That word attitude is subjective, and it is generally precipitated by some type of bias, in my humble opinion. But those are the kind of things that hurt, and those are the kind of things that I think pose obstacles to truly inclusive workplaces. You say you want everybody to be able to perform at their best. You say you want everyone to feel respected. You want everyone to have an equal opportunity, because they all have equal opportunity policies at success. But yet we still have things that are part of discrimination, that are part of systemic racism, that are part of bias, conscious and unconscious, that prevent inclusion from truly being realized.
You know, when you talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, it is my opinion that we're really talking about power and access to power, right? That people want to maintain power in their various spheres, particularly when you look at corporate America and the positions and the pay and all of that. So as a DE&I expert, how do you help companies to really address their systemic issues internally? What do companies, what do you do to help them? And then what do companies need to do? And then as an audience member, how can I help my company deal with the systemic issues they have around DE&I?
Okay, so we got three questions there. So first, organizations is to stop just using metrics to determine where they are with that, right? Oh, look at our numbers. We've got 20% of this and 20% of that. Stop using that. While that data does provide a picture of your quote unquote diversity, it says nothing about the culture of the organization. So really, really taking a look at your culture. What is the culture? What are patterns? Look at the leadership. What kind of people do you have in leadership roles? What are their thoughts? How do they process? How are they making decisions, right? And then providing coaching and training, if you will, to help them to grow in those areas, and then put things into place for sustainability. One thing they can put into place, attach it to their money. And that's something some organizations are doing now for their leadership. DEI is one of the competencies they're evaluated on, right? And if they don't do well in that, then guess what? That brings down the rest of your rating, which thus affects your money and other things. So building in accountability, you know, that goes beyond just those initial things for employees in the organization, speak up. And I know that's scary. And I tell employees that all the time. And they're like, I need my job. And nope, then I don't have a target on my back. And I can't say that sometimes those fears are not valid.
Yep. Right?
But what I do know is that if no one ever has the courage to speak up, then nothing will ever change. You can't sit back and say, well, this is a problem here, or here are the things that are happening that make this not a good place for me to be psychologically safe, or sometimes physically safe, or this is an organization that doesn't practice what it preaches in terms of diversity and inclusion, and then complain about it. You know, you gotta, it takes courage. I get that. But now more than ever is probably the time to speak up, because the spotlight is there. Mm-hmm, you know, chances are we're messing with you right now, because it's going to look so bad, you know, and they're worried about those optics. You know, they got optics to protect. So, you know, and again, as long as you, you know, follow their process and things like that, and do it the right way. I'm not saying to go in there and, you know, be all Malcolm X by any means necessary on them. Maybe a little bit more Martin Luther King, you know, in the way you present it, but definitely speak up, do your part to help bring it to light, because if no one ever speaks up, then they have no incentive to change, right? And they may, some may even be deluded into thinking, hey, well, everything's good because nobody's complaining. And I've heard leaders say that before, well, we don't get complaints. Just because you don't get them don't mean you don't have them. It just means that you have not created the type of environment where people feel comfortable sharing their truth. Or giving you honest feedback. And that's not good because there's no growth from that for the individual or for an organization. And then, you know, just others in general, you know, educating yourselves on it and figuring out what you can do. And, you know, you and I, we talked in another conversation and I said, I really, if I had been born in another time, perhaps I would love to be an activist. And I, in my own way, I am with the work that I do, but I would really love to be able to just be all out in your face activist. However, I like eating and I like having a roof over my head, and we have not gotten to that point in this society where I can just, you know, really bring my truth unfiltered. I was talking to a colleague this morning. I said, one of the changes that I see from last year, this time when everything was going on, is that now the messaging and the training is going back to a place of keeping the majority comfortable. Last year was like, hey, we want to get uncomfortable so you can grow, listen, hear, you know, understand. And now it's like, okay, well, bring that down. We don't want them to feel bad or feel, you know, like someone is saying they're horrible people. And I think that you can still tell the truth and do so objectively without labeling people. And that's what I try to do with my training.
That's good. That's good. And you know, a lot of people, when you talk about really providing training as you do to help people make those changes internally as individuals and then culturally as an organization, that a lot of times people have a hard time dealing with the issues revolved around equity because you have to deal with racism, you have to deal with sexism, you have to deal with classism, and that makes people feel uncomfortable, as you stated. And then just because they're dealing with those issues, they feel like dealing with those issues equates with being bad people.
Nobody's saying that.
But that's how it is internalized. I'm a bad person because I have participated in activities or decision making or conversations that were questionable. So therefore I'm a bad person. But that's not what you are trying to get them to do. You're trying to get them to acknowledge the challenge and then make the necessary changes. And somehow we have to get our audiences to recognize that it's not about good and bad people being a good or a bad person. The book White Fragility really deals with that. I don't know if you've ever checked that out.
Yes, I read that.
That is a great book. I actually
saw her speak. Saw it on YouTube. I didn't see her personally. Saw her speak at a university where she talked about her book and the different things. And that is true. You know, I the conversation I had with my client, I said, you know, sometimes it just really gets to me when I'm in a class environment and let's say, you know, a white guy says something that's like, oh, really? You know, where it's showing, okay, your roots are showing. And I have to say, you know what? Thank you for sharing, you know, and sharing your opinion. And yes, you are entitled to that opinion. And, you know, it takes courage to share that. You got to massage them. Because if you say, yeah, that's not really appropriate, then energy changes, shut down. It's perceived as an attack. It's, you know, you got to kind of tap dance a little bit, even though that person's comment got the other folks, the brown and black people in the room, feeling some kind of way. but I got to preserve their feelings because
in order to address
that person, right? Because in order to try to reach them so that they can continue to hear and maybe affect change, I got to tap dance. And sometimes I feel some kind of way about that, to tell you the truth, Ramona, but I understand. I guess it's the same as hiding the vitamins and the applesauce for the baby. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you're doing what you got to do so that the baby will take the vitamin. Mm-hmm. And that's what sometimes is necessary. But as a woman of color, I would be lying if I said I don't feel some kind of way about that.
You know? Yeah, so we've got a lot of work to do. Like you stated, it began last year, the racial reckoning. And I know we're not just talking about race when we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. We're talking about a lot of different factors in terms of embracing all people and creating an environment where all people are included and their equity. There's equity within the organization. That although it began last year and is not on level 10 as it was last year, but it's still there and it still will always be there as long as we have systemic issues regarding inequality. And so we have to do the work that we need to do to make sure or to ensure that we keep moving forward as a country, as a global society, but also within our individual communities, whether our community be within our cities or whether the community be within our organizations, institutions, and companies.
Absolutely.
So we really appreciate you having us. Thank you for encouraging our audience to really speak up and not be afraid to express themselves. That's the way, only way change will happen is when we speak up, but we also have to take time to educate ourselves on the issue. So if anybody would like to get in contact with you, Rhonda, how would they reach you?
Well, they can get the contact information at my website, which is letstalkllc.com. So that's letstalkllc.com.
Thank you. So you can reach Rhonda C. Height at letstalkllc.com. And thank you so much for joining us today. We look forward to having you back anytime.
Thank you. I enjoyed this. Thank you, Ramona.
So now we're at our college strategies component of our interview. Rhonda, what college or colleges did you attend? What was your major or majors? And then tell us what strategy you would give us for college success.
So Wayne State University and Chadwick University and business administration, nothing to do with HR. I wonder how I got there. But what I would say is that for the students, you have an awesome opportunity to be a voice in change. And I am so excited by all of the energy and the passion that I saw last year from just everybody, not just Black and brown people, all the young folks. And I would say, you know, continue to hold businesses, continue to hold organizations, and even the universities that you attend, to hold them accountable for doing their part to have diverse and equitable and inclusive workplaces. And as Dr. Houston said earlier, definitely educate yourselves on it as well. You will find, I think, the history, there's a lot. There's one of my favorite books is by J. California Cooper, and she wrote that the future has a past. That's the name of the book. And I think that's a good way of looking at it. Your future does have a past. And so I want to encourage all of you to study and do, you know, reading and examination so that you will understand why you are advocating for the things that you are advocating, and just continue to be bold in your voice and to continue to be courageous in your platform.
Thank you so much, Rhonda, for that great advice. Be a voice for change and make sure that you hold your institutions accountable to make sure that they engage in diversity, equity, and inclusion. Educate yourself on DE&I. Even though she didn't say that, check out J. California Cooper's book, The Future Has a Past. But most of all, be bold and courageous. Thank you so much, Rhonda, for joining us on the Empowerment Zone.
You're welcome. And thank you, Ramona. I enjoyed myself.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support. And of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.